You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of turning around the culture. I'm your host, James Masita, a.k.a. Fatrick Ewing, and this is episode 250. On today's show, we're joined by the great Ian Begley, beat writer covering the Knicks for ESPN. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk about the trade deadline and what centers the Knicks might be trying to move more than others. We're going to talk about Frank Ntilikina's confidence. Should he be sent to the G League? Should he be getting more minutes or somewhere in between? We're going to talk about Trey Burke. We're going to talk about the Joakim Noah and Jeff Hornacek situation. But first, I got two quick updates for you. One is very sad. Ron Baker, shot maker, candy from a baby taker, has unfortunately dislocated his shoulder and torn his labrum. He's out indefinitely. Huge bummer. It looked really bad. I am not surprised by the diagnosis, but I am upset both for the Knicks' chances and for Ron Baker. He dislocated his shoulder and tore his labrum while he had a mask on his face for a broken face, so that's a huge bummer. Get well soon, Ron Baker. I love what you do for the Knicks while you're out there. You should get more minutes, even though some of the fan base hate you. Second update before we get started. On Monday, we are going to bring back Alex Wolf to talk about trades. But it's a twist. It's a mailbaggy twist. What I want you guys to do is send in your trade ideas to locked.knicks@gmail.com. And Alex and I are going to discuss them and grade them. We may ridicule you. We may praise you. We may build you a monument if we think you're particularly creative and resourceful. But it's up to you. Send your trade ideas into lockedonknicks@gmail.com. All right, let's start the show. Let's bring in the great Ian Begley.
Yes!
So I want to talk about our rookie, Frank Ntilikina. And when people talk about Frank, a lot of the time they talk about his confidence. You know, when people think about, like, maybe we should send him to the G League, well, that hurt his confidence. Like, maybe he should be a starter. Well, that hurt his confidence if he then stumbles and he's got a couple bad headlines in the Post or, you know, whatever. So I'm curious, from your perspective, do you think Frank has any, like, confidence issues above and beyond a normal rookie? Do you think that's just, like, a good thing to think about when you think about any rookie? And how much do you think his confidence plays a role in Hornacek's decision-making? Is that overblown when fans talk about it, or is that, like, a legitimate concern?
Well, I think, I don't know if it's confidence as much as if Frank is playing well, they want to keep him in there. Mm-hmm. But if he's not playing well and he's making some mistakes, I think they want to limit those, and that's why you see sometimes Jeff give Frank a quick hook. You know, we can debate the merits of that strategy, but I think that's what the organization would like to see, and that's what the coaching staff is carrying out. I think that with Frank, I don't think he has any confidence issues. You know, I think for a 19-year-old kid, he's very mentally healthy. He is sure of himself, but any 19-year-old in the NBA, James, you mentioned it, is going to have to deal with ups and downs throughout the season, and I think that's going to just naturally impact your confidence and the way you view yourself in your job. So that would happen, I think, with any player that's 19. But I don't think Frank especially has any kind of a confidence issue. I think he's pretty steady. But I think when you talk about the way he's used and, you know, his playing time and things like that, I don't think they want him to play, you know, 30, 35 minutes, right, and play through a ton of mistakes. I think they want to kind of slow play his minutes and his role because he is just 19. Mm-hmm. He's one of the youngest players in this league, and they don't see a benefit to kind of throwing him to the wolves and, you know, having potentially shaking his confidence, putting him in those kinds of situations.
So, do you think... how do I want to put this? Do you think that they think he's getting as many minutes as they would like? I mean, because he's averaging just under 20 right now. A lot of times rookies come in around that, like, 25-minute mark. Do you think they wish they could kind of give him a little bit more, but he hasn't shown that he's able to handle that load yet? Or do you think it's also just kind of like, you know, the season's a little more than halfway done, they're kind of easing him into a bigger role, and it's more of a, like, gradual process?
I think that part of it is this team, you know, it's obviously a few games out of eighth place, but I think from the top down, organization, coaches, players, they still see themselves as a potential playoff team. Mm-hmm. And I think that they are operating as such. I think they see, you know, letting Jarrett Jack start and play those minutes as the best opportunity for them to be, you know, consistently competitive. And I think that, you know, with Frank, you know, the opportunity is there for him to play really well and to play better than Jarrett Jack and give them an opportunity to win. But there's also every chance that he's going to stumble because he's 19 and he's going to put them into a hole. So I think they see Jack as that steadying presence and that guy that gives them the best chance to win games. Now, I think if the Knicks were to fall out of the race, if it becomes apparent that they have no shot at that eighth seed, I would assume then that you do see more Frank Ntilikina. Now, again, we can, you know, debate their strategy here. I happen to think that Frank should be playing more minutes. That I don't mm-hmm. see a real strong reason for Jarrett Jack to be starting. But I can see how they're thinking in terms of playoff positioning, and they're still being alive for this eighth seed at this point, and wanting to put themselves in the best position to get that eighth seed, you know, for the players and. So I can see it. I don't agree with it, but I do see where they're coming from.
Yeah, I think that would be my official stance on it too. I don't think it's necessarily egregious, but I'd like to see him get like a little bit more time, and I'd like to see some of Jack's minutes replaced, if possible, by Trey Burke. He struggled a little bit last night against Brooklyn, but speaking of him, you know, I guess since I just brought him up, what do you think the Knicks think they have in Trey Burke? Do they view him as a potential long-term fit? And if so, like, what sort of role do you think they might envision for him?
So I think they do see him as potentially a guy who can be a piece for them going forward, who can be a part of that young core. Because, you know, he's still so young. Mm-hmm. He's still so early. It's so early in his NBA career, you know, games-wise, minutes-wise, that he still can fit into a quote-unquote young core of a team. And I think that they see the potential there for him to be that kind of a player. He's got to show it on the court, and I think he's going to get every opportunity to show it on the court. But I think, you know, they see him as that, you know, backup kind of combo guard, point guard coming off the bench. They like how he played so far with Frank Ntilikina. They mm-hmm. I think they see that as a backcourt that they want to see more of. So I think that Trey is not just some guy that they signed from the D League to fill out the roster for the rest of the season. I think he has every opportunity here to grab a roster, but to grab a spot in this young core that the Knicks are trying to put together. The Knicks are excited about what they've seen so far, but I think they want to see more, and they have to see more before they actually commit any kind of a you know, long-term deal or put him into their long-term vision going forward here. He is under contract for next year, and I think that it's a pretty safe bet that he'll be here next year. His contract becomes guaranteed if he's on the roster at certain dates. So I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be at this point. But then beyond that, I think he has to show that he can be that guy that people saw coming out of Michigan, great shooter, a guy who knows how to operate within the confines of an NBA offense. And if he shows that, I think the Knicks would like him to be a part of this thing going forward.
I'm curious what you think of the Trey Burke, Frank Ntilikina look. I am of the mind that I think it's good for Frank to develop versatility, both offensively and defensively, getting some minutes at the two. I know some fans think it's a waste to play him minutes not at the point guard if that's where they see him long term. Where do you stand on that question?
I think people, within the organization are still kind of trying to figure out what Frank is in terms of one or two, mm-hmm. combination of both. I think that's why you're going to see him at the two at times, because He has the height to be an off guard. I don't know if his game, the rest of his game, fits being an off guard, but I think they want to see what he is and they want to see how he operates in that spot. So that's why I think you'll see that Trey Burke Ntilikina look. Maybe you'll see the Jarrett Jack Ntilikina look, just to get him off the ball a little bit, because defensively we know he can play off the ball. Mm-hmm. He could defend the two, he could defend the one. Offensively, the questions I think are come for him with both positions. Can he get by his man off the dribble? Right. Can he finish at the rim consistently, or is he good enough to create his own shot and consistently make an outside shot if he's a two guard? So I think there are questions for both positions there for him. And again, this is so early in the process with Frank. I think the Knicks are just trying to put him in different positions to see where he thrives and to see what they can project for him several years down the line.
Yeah, I think that's smart. I really agree with that approach. In just a moment, we're going to talk about Joakim Noah, and we're going to talk about the trade deadline. But first, I want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes, rate us 5 stars, leave a quick review. It helps other Knicks fans discover the show. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. I still want to talk about Joakim Noah, but first I got to talk to fantasy sports fans. Listen up! Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? It's true. That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. I play fantasy on 1,278 sites. I rank them all in an Excel spreadsheet. Draft is number one. That's because I don't get crushed by the pros. I mean, I'm a pro, so maybe I'm doing the crushing. But it's not just me. More than 1 million people have downloaded Draft. You can play in a real, live NBA draft right now, and you'll be done in under 5 minutes. And then you'll get paid out the next day when you win because you're smarter than everyone else. You're better than everyone else. Drafts are filling every second. It's true. Every time I go in here, I'm like, man, I hope I don't have to wait. And then boom, I'm in one. So you can join a draft whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. Only catch is you got to use my promo code LONICKS. There are many like it, but this one is mine. Playing a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LONICKS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're offering Locked On Knicks listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. What do you got to lose, you little chumps? Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code LONICKS. All right, so I'd like to talk a little bit about the players' reaction to the whole Joakim Noah, Jeff Hornacek thing. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Joakim Noah's, you know, leave of absence, quote-unquote, with stories about him, you know, shouting at Hornacek during the Golden State game and, again, during practice in Denver. There were some rumors last year, not necessarily substantiated, but some whispers of, you know, Hornacek potentially losing the locker room. So, you know, in light of that, I'm just curious, do you have a sense how the players take this whole situation? Like, does Noah yelling at Hornacek undermine Hornacek at all? Or is this the kind of thing that happens from time to time and the players don't think too much about it? What do you think?
I think it's more the latter. I think that this is something that happens pretty regularly. But I think the degree to which it went that practice after the Golden State game was a bit surprising, I think, for everybody involved. A couple of people have said that it got pretty bad. So, listen, you know, these are all grown men. They're competitive guys. Coaches and players get into it at practice. It does happen. But I think that the place it went in this instance was a little bit surprising. As far as Jeff having lost the locker room, I think he did lose it in a sense last season because of Phil Jackson's, you know, insistence on them emphasizing the triangle more halfway through the year. I think the players saw that as kind of Jeff not being able to be his own man and Phil right. kind of dictating things from above. And in this season, I don't know if it was there was a clean slate necessarily, but I think when the Knicks were winning games early on, everybody's happy when you're winning, and that's how it was. But when you're losing, you know, negative emotions tend to come to the surface. Sure. That's the case with any professional sports team. In this specific instance with Joe and Jeff, I'm not sure that it really undermines the way Jeff had what kind of presence Jeff has or doesn't have in the locker room. Maybe to a slight degree it has, but I think by and large it was kind of maybe an isolated incident between Jeff and Joe, and I think guys have kind of left it there. Maybe Joe said some things that other players were thinking, and maybe they appreciated that, but I think the way things played out, there were a couple lines crossed, and that's why Joe is not with the team right now.
Do you know any specifics about what lines were crossed? If you can't say them, that's, I'm just curious, like, how much more people know, like, in your position than their kind of, you know, decorum would dictate they report on?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because you hear things and you really can't speak about them, write them, or, you know, broadcast them unless you kind of know without a doubt that they're factually true. So, you know, you hear a lot of rumors, but nothing much substantiated. I think you can guess that there were expletives used and things sure. got heated, and kind of that's where it is as far as what I'm comfortable reporting. But it seemed like one of those things where things were bubbling to the surface, and then Joe didn't play as much as he thought he was going to play in that Golden State game, and you know, things unfolded the way they did.
So you mentioned something interesting, that he may have said some stuff that, like, some people might have been thinking about. To me, the Knicks have, like, sort of a weird leadership structure with, like, Lance Thomas being a captain. Courtney Lee makes a little more sense to me, but, you know, clearly not, like, Chris Stapps, who is the overall, like, number one, you know, focus of the Knicks franchise, as it should be. Is there any sense from you that this locker room is a little bit less, like, I don't know, like, the players have, I don't know if less of a voice is what I'm trying to say, but, like, is it, how common would it be for, like, people to be kind of wondering stuff about their coaching decisions and why certain things are being done, but then, like, not say them until, like, a blow-up from Joakim Noah, for instance?
I think that kind of stuff, questioning the coach, happens every night in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's, you know, you don't hear about it publicly a lot because it doesn't usually reach the level of a player blowing up at a coach and then leaving the team. But I think, you know, we all kind of question our bosses in certain instances, and I think NBA players are no different. And sure. it is a little bit different because the stakes are a lot higher, and the decisions that your boss makes affects you on a night-to-night basis. So I think that kind of stuff happens night in and night out in the NBA. It's just a matter of sometimes it getting out publicly, and other times, the majority of times, it remaining behind closed doors.
Okay, so nothing exceptional in the Knicks situation then about how that kind of stuff.
I think so, and I've been in this locker room for I think 6 or 7 seasons, and there have been some bad times and a lot of drama where things have seeped into the locker room, and you can kind of feel the tension. You can feel, you know, factions of guys, groups not getting along with other groups, things like that. I haven't gotten that sense this season in this locker room. These guys have been pretty together, just from my vantage point. We don't see a lot. We're with these guys for a fraction of the time that they spend together. So it would be disingenuous of me to say this is exactly what's going on or that's exactly what's going on. But based on, you know, my observations, these guys are pretty together. They like each other. They've stayed together through some bad losses. So this doesn't strike me as a group that's fractured at this point.
No, that's some good insight, because it definitely seems like that from the outside, especially, you know, during this what seems to be an annual January swoon. And it has been heartening, maybe not for people who want the Knicks to go into 100% tank mode, but to see how they didn't just, like, completely, you know, throw in the towel and start lacking effort. And it's definitely a positive in the coaching column and the, you know, management column for Perry and Mills, that they have put together a team that's stuck together through some not pleasant things. I want to talk about the trade deadline, but first, just want to remind you guys that you're listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. There is a podcast for every team in the NBA and the NFL. If you want to hear about what's going on with the Blake Griffin trade, you can try Locked On Pistons. You can try Locked On Clippers. If you want to hear about how the Cavs are dealing with the Kevin Love injury, you can try Locked On Cavs. All part of the Locked On Podcast Network. All right, I had to keep the people waiting for it, for the trade deadline stuff. That's what everyone you know, wants to hear about. But our listeners have got to exercise some patience, just like the Knicks have. Now, we know the Knicks have a glut or have a logjam or whatever you want to call it of centers. We know they're listening to offers for their centers. And it seems to me like a lot of what will or will not happen will be, you know, dictated almost more by the offers that are out there, more than the player that they're trying to move. It almost seems like there's a couple that they're equally fine with moving, but I'm wondering if that checks with what you see. Do you have a sense on if the Knicks would prefer to move like one or the other of their centers, or does it just depend on the haul, do you think?
Well, my answer to that would be the preference would be to trade Joakim Noah, but that's...
I guess I'm just assuming that's a given.
Yeah. So between Kanter, O'Quinn, and Hernan Gomez, I think we all know that the most likely to be dealt would be Hernan Gomez or O'Quinn. And I don't think there's a preference one way or the other. I don't think management is sitting there today saying, we're definitely going to trade Kyle O'Quinn, or we're definitely going to trade Billy Hernan Gomez. As you stated, I think you're 100% right. Depends on the offers. Depends on, I think it depends on what they think this team is going forward to. Because I think if they feel like they can still sneak into the eighth seed, you know, Kyle O'Quinn's a guy who's been important to this team, and he's played an important role on this team this season. So I don't think that, you know, if the offers are not great, I could see them maybe just going forward with those two guys on the roster together, mm-hmm. because I don't think they're in a rush to make a move to change the composition of this team, speaking specifically about Kyle O'Quinn, because he's been such a big role in what they've done so far. Granted, they're not very good, but they're better than I think a lot of people expected. And I think one concern of the team is to not mess with like any kind of a chemistry that they have, unless it like trading Kyle O'Quinn brings back a good piece, or a piece that they think, either a draft pick or a young player that they think can be a part of their future. I don't think they're in a rush to move him, and I think the same goes with Billy. I know there's a lot of frustration in the fan base with Billy not playing a ton, but I don't think the Knicks have written him off at all. It just so happened that Kyle outplayed him early on, mm-hmm. earned the minutes as a backup center, and has played pretty well in that role, and that's just how the season played out. But I don't think the Knicks are in a rush to make a trade of Billy Hernan Gomez unless a deal comes along that makes sense for them, that brings back either a draft pick or a player that they see can help them in a long term.
Now, I want to dig into like Kanter a little bit more and what the organization thinks about him, because I mean he's an easy guy to love. He works his ass off out there. He hams it up, so he's joking, and, you know, people like his enthusiasm, and but I know a lot of people are also concerned about, you know, how much he gives the Knicks for his salary, especially when you factor in his defense, and when you factor in, he seems to have a lot more success against these kind of old school big lineups than against some of the more, you know, modern smaller lineups that you see in like Golden State and in various teams when they're playing small at the end of games and deep into the playoffs. I mean, do you think the Knicks would be okay with keeping Kanter at his like current salary as a starter next to Kristaps? I also think that why they are okay together, it's not like an ideal pairing. Do you think they see him long term? Like, I know a lot of people are kind of like conspiracy theory that they're only playing him, you know, to showcase for a trade. I'm not so sure that's the case, but I'm curious what you think about that.
The sense that I get is you know, they like Enes a lot. They like that, Enes. They like Enes a lot. They like the way he's kind of created this relationship with the fan base, you know, based on what he says and social media and things like that. I think that, again, this is not going to factor into their decision and how they view him as a center for them long term, but I think they appreciate the way he's done that. And I think they appreciate what he's done on the court. I don't know if they've drawn a strong conclusion one way or the other on if he's their long term answer at center, or if it's ultimately going to be Kristaps Porzingis. But I think they're comfortable with the idea of having him back next year, and having him, you know, be a part of what they're trying to build foundation of a new culture around here. Just both on the court and off the court, I think they like what he's done. Again, he has his flaws as a player. I think we all have seen that and we know that. But I think that going back to September, when the Knicks were kind of in a tough place having to deal Carmelo Anthony, I think bringing back a player like Kanter, who's been as productive as he's been, was a pretty good haul for this team, because they were in such a tough spot with Melo. But as far as going forward, I think they'd be fine for him to opt in next year, and I'm not sure. I don't know beyond that if they see him as a piece for this young core that they're trying to build. Mm-hmm. I think maybe the jury might be out there, or maybe they do, and I just don't know about it yet.
Does he seem like the kind of guy who might be okay being a backup, or he's just like, I want to be the starter, I'm out of here kind of vibe?
Well, he's been a backup earlier in his career, mm-hmm. in OKC. He was coming off the bench, so every time we talk to him about something that involves him, his role as an individual, numbers he is or isn't putting up, his default is kind of to say, just it's about winning. If we're winning, I'm fine with everything. I just want to win games. I don't care my minutes, my points, anything like that. Starting, coming off the bench, I just want to win. So I think if he was in a situation where he was winning, like he was in OKC, coming off the bench, he'd be fine. Maybe if, you know, they're losing games and he sees that he being a starter or playing more minutes can help the team win games, maybe then he gets upset, which would be understandable.
Okay, yeah. I want to ask you one more question about the trade deadline, and then I'll let you go. We've mentioned a couple times, like, depending on how the Knicks look like they're going to enter the playoff hunt, you know, if they make up a couple games or if they fall back, they might do X, Y, Z. Does what the Knicks do on the court over, like, the next week, does it really have that much impact on what they might want to do, the front office, in terms of trades? Or, because I got to believe that they'd have kind of like a, they think one way or the other that they're going to be buyers or sellers. But do you really think they're that up in the air for, like, the next 7-8 days, what happens could change that decision?
No, the sense that I have is that I don't think what happens in the next week or so is going to sway them greatly one way or the other. I don't think they're going to sell off assets and think about tanking for the draft. I don't think that's where they are, regardless of what happens over the next week.
Right.
At the same time, I don't think they're going to think that they are one piece away and want to make this a crazy trade to bring
that's,
in a piece.
That's comforting.
Come like some 760 in the East. I don't think they're going to do anything to jeopardize what they have going forward. They're not going to trade their first round pick. They're not going to bring back salary to ruin their cap situation going forward. I don't think, unless something crazy comes along, that's not in the card. So I think they're kind of taking that middle ground approach where we're not selling off. We're not going to, you know, put ourselves in position to lose every game just for the draft. We want to remain competitive, but we're not going to hurt our situation going forward where we see we have cap space in the summer of 2019, and that's a place where we think we can do some damage and add to our core and free agency. So I think that's the mindset, and I don't think anything they do at the trade deadline is going to change that.
All right, that's comforting to hear. That actually freaked me out a little bit, the idea that they might be waffling this much this late in the season. Like, you know.
Well, as a longtime Knicks fan, I could see how you would have kind of PTSD from previous regimes and previous years. So
it's going to take a couple of decades of a well-managed Knicks team for me to shake all that.
So. I get it.
But, Ian, I want to thank you so much for joining us. You're in Boston right now, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm up here.
Try to enjoy that horrible city if you can while you're up there.
All right? Thanks, James. I appreciate it, man.
So that was fun, right? Always like talking to Ian, getting the inside scoop from the locker room. That's it for us for today, guys. Thank you very much for listening. If you got a moment, I want you to do a couple things for me. Rate us on iTunes, 5 stars only. Don't be a dick about it. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. If you like this show, tell your friends about it, right? It helps us grow. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnKnicks. You can follow me at NBA Injury Report. I want you to be chill to each other. That's the most important. Be chill to each other. And have a good day, alright? I'll see you tomorrow. Peace!